Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome, and thank you for listening in. My name is Linda Mooney, and this is Other Worlds of Romance, and I am just thrilled. I have back with us Marcia A. Moore. Marcia, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm so glad to be back. It's been a little while, and I'm excited to talk to your listeners.
Oh, and I'm so excited to have you back, because those of you who don't know, Marcia was back a while ago, over a year ago, with Witch's Moonstone Locket, which is book one of her Coon Hollow Coven tales. And since then, she's released Witch's Cursed Cabin, and now most recently one called Blood, Ice, and Oak Moon, which I love the title of that. And and she's going to be talking. So we've got a two for tonight. She's going to be talking about both The Witch's Cursed Cabin and Blood, Ice, and Oak Moon. And if you'd like to talk to her after she gets through reading little short excerpts from both, we'd be more than happy to have you here. The number is 646-727-2932. Or you can, if you're listening there on the website, or if you're listening in on the Facebook page or whatever, or the chat room, you got a question, just send us a question into the chat room, and I'd be more than happy to answer it. Or you can email it to me, linda@lindamooney.com, and we'll pass it along for. But first thing I've got to ask you, Marcia, though, is Blood, Ice, and Oak Moon. That is probably one of the most unique titles for a book that I have ever heard. Where did you get that?
Well, the series of Coon Hollow Coven Tales follows the pagan calendar, and the main books, which will all be titled Witches Something, are all about the Sabbath, the main eight holidays of the pagan calendar. And then I wanted to do a few of the minor holidays called Esbats, which are the times of the full moon. They're celebrations of the full moon. And so that's where I was using Oak Moon, because it is set at the December full moon, which is also called the Oak Moon. And Blood, Ice refers to some of the magic that goes on. And there's a young witch who can read signs in nature and emotions in other people, and she witnesses a murder from the very first chapter and sees ice that's stained with red and signifying revenge. And so that's where the title comes from.
Ooh, that is wild. That is wild. I love that. I know. I wanted to also come back. Now, you, like I said, you had released Witch's Cursed Cabin earlier, and like you said, it was in the summer, and you weren't able to come. And I'm a little peeved at you at that, because I would have loved for you to come on the show this summer and brought it with you.
But I didn't do a lot of marketing for Witch's Cursed Cabin then, because it's set at Samhain, at Halloween. And so I'm marketing that book really hard this month and getting a lot of great feedback. And it's a perfect Halloween story. It's very good
Super.
For now. So.
Oh, I will pardon you on that.
Okay.
For that slight there. But no, really, I mean, even Halloween, if it's, you know, I love to read. I'm one of those strange people that love to read seasonal books all year long. It doesn't have to be just during the season and all. And especially with witches. I mean, because now your witches, though, are not your normal, what people expect of witches.
No, they're very much real people. It's a very pagan-oriented series, but with touches of very fictitious magic on top of a foundation of authentic Wiccan and pagan ideals. So, it's a little bit more true to real life than a lot of the witch books out there now. And I'm finding an audience that really appreciates that. And, they're learning a lot and enjoying that aspect of it. So,
Now, for those of you who don't know about Marcia, let me give you a little bit of background. She does write fantasy and paranormal romances, and much of her life feeds the creative flow that she uses to weave these highly imaginative tales. Now, the magic of art and nature, they spark life into her writing, as well as other pursuits of watercolor painting and drawing. And she's been a yoga enthusiast for over a decade and is a registered yoga teacher. Her practice helps weave the mystical into her writing. And after a move from Toledo to Tampa in 2008, she happily transformed then into a Floridian in love with the outdoors, where she's always been on the lookout for portals to other worlds. Now, she's crazy about cycling, and she lives with her husband on a large saltwater lagoon where she takes her kayak out to enjoy the waves. She feels she never has enough days to spend at the beach, and she's usually scribbling away stories with her toes wheeling in the sand because every day at the beach is magical. Now, I got to ask you, ever met a crocodile or two or an alligator?
Not out kayaking, because we live on a brackish lagoon, and it's salty enough that the alligators can't really endure the saltiness. And so I've only seen one in that water once, and it was a freak thing where there was a lot of fertilizer being dumped into the water, and that caused the fish to weaken. And some local alligator saw a great meal and dove in. But there's only been one that I've seen in the almost 9 years that we've been here. So,
Before we go any further, I've got to compliment your cover artist, because I do think that the cover, I mean, you've got gorgeous covers, but I do think Blood Ice and Oak Moon is probably the most beautiful cover.
I am my own cover artist, so that's a wonderful compliment. Yeah, I am.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, well, look at this. You know, not only can you write a great story, but you're also a great cover artist, too. So, well, on that note, I am going to just turn the floor over to you. And you want to start with what, Witch's Curse Cabin first?
Sure. Do you want me to pause in between and discuss it, or how would you like me to?
Let's start with the blurb and the excerpt, and if we have a question, we'll take it, and if not, we'll just go into the next one.
All righty. Do you have the blurb, or do you want me to share it?
Won't you go ahead with the blurb?
Okay. Let's see. Okay.
Do you have it?
For Witches, yes, I do. For Witches' Cursed Cabin.
Okay.
It's eager to be on her own away from home, 20-year-old Aggie Anders accepts a relative's invitation to live in Coon Hollow Coven. Although she's a witch from a different coven, what locals say about the hollow confuses her. How can witchcraft there live and breathe through souls of the dead? Aggie's new residence in the strange southern Indiana world is a deserted homestead cabin. The property's carriage house serves as the coven's haunted Halloween fundraiser. It's a great opportunity for her to make new friends, especially with the coven's sexy new high priest, Logan. But living in the homestead also brings Aggie enemies. Outsiders aren't welcome. A cantankerous old neighbor tries to frighten her off by warning her that the homestead is cursed. Local witches who practice black magic attempt to use their evil to drive Aggie away and rid the coven of her unusual powers as a sun witch. But determined to stay and fit in, Aggie discovers not only that the cabin is cursed, but she is alone. She alone is destined to break the curse before moonrise on Samhain. If she fails, neither the living nor the dead will be safe. Okay, so now I'll read an excerpt about how Aggie is preparing for Samhain night. She has to do a bit of necromancy, and she has to raise a dead body, and she's never done that before. And so that's where she's trying to get some information and help. So I'll begin there. I knocked on the door of the magical tool specialist shop. Timewell Tinker met us, his green eyes gleaming. "Come in, ladies." With the delicacy of that magical device, I wasn't surprised we needed to meet again. He already wore his jeweler's loop and motioned us to follow to his examination area. The building's exterior contrasted sharply with the inside. In the spacious room, dozens of antique curio cabinets lined one wall, their shelves packed with shiny display items. Gleaming swords hung from the walls. A network of display counters lit with internal lighting as in jewelry shops filled the rest of the room. Metal, gems, and polished ivory and bone objects gleamed in every corner. From behind his work counter, the trim man, who looked to be in his 70s, laid a felt pad to accept my marble keepsake box. The twinkle in his green eyes outshone his flat-lipped grin, mirroring the exterior and interior of his shop. I set the small box down and displayed its contents. We added Cerise's hair, but when I applied magic through my wand, only the tips of the hairs accepted the power. As I see, you told me over the phone there is another relation, now deceased, who isn't represented in this collection of hair. He glanced at Cerise. His magnified eye now clouded to a gray-green. Is that true? Yes, my great-uncle Fenton O'Meara didn't contribute a hair sample. By the way, the keepsake partially responds, it's my feeling his missing contribution will allow Aggie to activate the full magic. Time closed the lid and ran a finger over the chipped edge. My, what happened here? Fenn's spirit wanted out to find out whether his hair was in the box. Cerise fidgeted with her purse. He had an unsuccessful tussle trying to open it. I see. The specialist raised a bushy gray brow, then bent over the carved surface. He placed a palm over top and briefly closed his eyes. The fluidity and paleness of this design in the translucent alabaster speaks of oniromancy, an old-world dreamcraft. I knew your mother well and respected her vast talents in that magic. Was the creator an expert as well? Oh, yes. Grammy Ellie was exceptional at dream magic, Cerise replied. Tyne nodded with a grin. I suspected your mother inherited that tendency from one parent. He wrapped the keepsake and handed it back to me. Can you help us? I blurted out too fast, unable to contain my anxiety. He pushed the loop high on his forehead, now crisscrossed with lines, and looked up through hooded eyes. In part, as I only consider myself an expert on magical tools, I'll gladly supply you with some of the finest customarily needed to raise the dead. But as for the procedures to follow, you will need to contact the keepsake's creator. I felt blood drain from my face. Do I have to raise Fenton's body? Since I have permission of Fenton's spirit, can't I just dig up his body and take a piece of hair? Time met my gaze. No, the body must be honored. That is our way. Follow me. He hurried down a short hall and out the back door to a small building of the same limestone construction. From his trouser pocket, Tyne withdrew a large ring of at least 50 keys and selected one that fit the lock. He pushed the door open, stepped through, and flipped on dim lamps that barely lit the windowless room. Inside, stale air pressed on me, a heavy odor of identifiable wormwood, anise, myrrh, and yew, along with something unfamiliar lodged in the depths of my lungs. I coughed to eliminate the foreboding stench. What's that awful smell? Rancid graveyard dirt, most likely, Tyne said matter-of-factly, and turned on a ceiling fan. I'm sorry for the close air in here. It's the nature of necromancy tools. They've been cleaned of past energies, but some have become embedded. This collection must be kept separate for that reason, as well as to preserve their darkness. Instead of the main shop's glass front cases and glittering display counters, here heavy floor-to-ceiling cabinetry lined the walls, making the small room close in on us. He walked around a central dark-stained table, selected another key, and opened a set of double doors. Dozens of skulls of various sizes, ages, and conditions stared at us. Most looked into space, but a couple seemed to fix their empty eye sockets on me. to test the creepy connection, I watched the skeleton heads as I walked past collection. The two skulls pivoted in my direction. My mouth dropped open. Tyne studied me. Has one connected with you? Two. I pointed to a medium-sized earthy brown skull and a larger of pearl gray. Interesting. Most cannot claim even one's attention. Will you need to receive verbal communication with the risen body? If so, you will need the gray one, which possesses a lower jaw. I need the body to hear my request and allow me to take some hair from its head. My voice shook, considering my affinity to particular skulls. I wouldn't think the corpse needs to. Lost my page. Wouldn't think the corpse needs to speak. Sorry. Then the brown-colored one will be best and least expensive too. He removed the selection and placed it in a willow basket on the center table. He secured the first cabinet and opened another, which revealed drab-looking blades made of brass. Touch each and determine which is best aligned with you. I narrowed the collection to dozens, down to a few, then chose a short-handled dagger and passed it to Tyne. Compared to the others, this one didn't shoot fear and dread through me. Either it was the correct choice or the only one that wouldn't do anything. I swallowed hard and accepted my intuition. Next, Tyne opened a cabinet that made us all wheeze and cough. You ones, please select one as before, taking care not to touch your face or clothing. You will wash after your selection is made. With one hand over my nose, I picked up each. The icy fear from the knives heightened to stabbing needles of panic and alarm piercing my skin. All produced the ill effect, but I persevered until I found a U wand that didn't send waves of nausea to my stomach. Tyne accepted the wand into a muslin sack and showed me to a sink on the opposite wall. Those are all the tools I know to supply you with. He wrapped my items in tissue paper before arranging them in a small wooden crate. We'll go to the main room now and enjoy the lighter air. While gulping lungfuls of air, I negotiated payment of the $500 bill with Cerise. She wouldn't back down from paying $400. This is for my family. Honestly, Aggie, I should be paying you for the service of your witchcraft. We thanked Tyne and left. I stored my purchases behind the driver's seat. When we were both inside with the doors closed, the stench from the tools soon wafted around my head. Dizziness and nausea plagued me as I started the car. Cerise cracked a window. That's heady stuff. Let's drop by Vicka's to get whatever she's prepared. Like I said before, I'm not expecting much in the way of black magic and necromancy from her. I picked up enough dream magic from Mama to know that your best method will be to contact Grandma, who can help you with the messy business. I eyed her but didn't ask. It took all my faculties to drive. And that's the end of the excerpt.
Oh, golly.
So that's what I needed to prepare for her Halloween Samhain evening.
Oh, it's just dirt that's just got all the death smell in it and everything like that, and I could just smell it. We got a question a couple of minutes ago.
Sure.
from a Marcia, but it's Marcia, and she says, do I need to read these series in order, or can I read them separately?
That's a wonderful question, and no, you do not have to read them in any order. All of the Coon Hollow Coven Tales novels can be read as standalone books, and how I have designed the series, the setting is the same, and the magical system is basically the same, but each book has its own unique story and own unique main characters. Now, you may find a secondary character from one book become a main character in another, along with new characters that you've never seen, but each book is definitely standalone, and I have read I have had many, many reviewers attest to that, and so I feel confident in saying
good.
You'll enjoy each book individually.
Okay.
If you, you know,
all
you'll,
right.
If you read the others, you'll know when a secondary character comes in that was a previous primary, and you'll know more about them, but
mm-hmm.
it won't change how you read that book.
Oh, okay. Well, let's get started now on Blood, Ice, and Oak Moon. So
okay.
Take it away.
All right. This that I'm going to read is in a Thane's point of view. Thane is the hero. He is the king, the fairy king of the Winter Court. And
mm-hmm.
he is approaching a young witch's house. Her name is Esmeralda or Esme. And so
mm-hmm.
that's where I'll begin.
Okay,
Thane
well, how about the blood? Well, okay, how about the blurb?
Oh, yes, go ahead. So sorry. You're right. I've never done two books with you before. This is a lot.
This is neat,
right,
though. I love this. I feel like
Esme
Christmas.
Underhill. Yeah. Esme Underhill is about to discover a darkness hidden inside her that could destroy her chance for independence and possibly kill her. Her mother took her away from southern Indiana's Kunhalla Coven to prevent her from learning about the unusual witchcraft she had inherited. When Esme is 27, her beloved Grammy Flora passes away and leaves her property in the Hollow to her granddaughter. With this opportunity to remake her life and gain independence, Esme attempts to emulate Grammy Flora as a wildwood mystic who relies on the hedge world of fairies to locate healing herbs. But they are shrewd traitors. When they open their world to her, she must meet the unknown malevolence of her birthright. Thane, the handsome king of the Fey Winter Court, faces his own struggle to establish autonomy as a new regent. He is swept into the tempest of Esme's unfolding powers, a dangerous threat to his court. His sworn duty is to protect his people despite Esme's beauty and allure, which tear at his resolve. Both Esme's and Thane's dreams of personal freedom are lost unless they can trust each other and overcome surrounding dangers.
Ooh, fairies. Ooh,
so we have
I love.
Fae and witch worlds colliding.
Uh-huh.
All right. Now I'll share my short reading with you. Thane leaped onto the porch and tried the door handle without luck. He pounded on the door. Esmeralda, are you there? Upon receiving no response, he bolted in a fraction of a heartbeat to the back of the house. A curtain of icicles met the log porch rails and blocked his view. He rounded to the steps. Esmeralda lay crumpled on the porch floor. Thane ducked under the icy valance and slid on his knees to her side. Esmeralda, he cried. But she didn't respond. Frozen crystals hung to ringlets framing her pale face with lips blue and pure as a fair January sky. Like a Winter Court princess, she took his breath away. Shade touched a hand to Thane's shoulder. Is she still with us? Jostled by the contact, Thane's nightmare took shape and Esmeralda's lovely face transformed into a wild boar. He blinked, and she appeared beautiful as before. He reached for the talisman on her chest. If evil dwelled inside her, as one of the Autumn Fae Court, he should take the crystal and leave her to die. He swallowed hard against the decision best for his Winter Court. The nightmare's not reality, not magic, only in my mind, my own weakness. No matter what she is, I have to save her. There's a chance. He pressed a hand to her neck. Even with his acute senses, her pulse registered weak for a fairy and dangerous for a human. With an ear to her chest, he listened for her heart, which also beat with a dim and sluggish rhythm. Dozens of broken icicles lay scattered around her. He picked up one and viewed the scene of young Esmeralda on a swing with a man who looked to be her father. Dark magic, Esmeralda, what have you done? Thane moaned and tossed the ice chunk away. Pulling her into his arms, he nodded to his guards. They helped him carry her inside and laid her on the love seat. The cat bounded into her lap and rubbed against her limp hands. One guard snatched two cloaks, one green and the other crimson, from a washstand towel bar and held them out to Captain Shade. He accepted the red and offered it to Thane, my king. Thane wrapped Esmeralda in the thick wool garment. We need to get a fire going to warm her. The guards lay kindling on the fireplace grate and opened the flue, then stepped back. While most Winterfey and certainly his staff could create fire, none could do so quicker than Thane. He cupped a hand to bring a spark to life and touched it to the twigs until they crackled with blue flames. A guard worked a bellows to fan the flames, and Thane checked on Esmeralda. "Then keep watching her while I work in the kitchen." Shade took his place and bent his lanky body over the young woman. Thane scanned a wall of jars containing dried herbs and canned goods. "Please let them be here." "Yes," he snatched jars of winter savory and pinto beans. Into a large saucepan from a cabinet, he poured four handfuls of beans, one of the herb, and covered them with water. He spread his hands over the pot until the broth warmed and vaporized the frost on his fingers into steam. He ladled the charmed soup into a bowl and found a spoon. Beside the love seat, he nodded to his captain, "Help her sit up." Thane knelt, touched her cheek, then pressed a spoonful to her lips. "Esmeralda, taste this. It's warm and will heal you." The shred of life within her had to take over now. He could do no more. If she was a wayward like her father, she'd likely respond to the soup's magic. If not, her chances were slim. With her neck tilted to one side, Esmeralda's beautiful white face remained unchanged. Thane struggled to keep his hand holding the spoon still, and he begged, "Esmeralda, please wake up. Taste the soup." Her cat, perched on the back of the love seat, helped with a sharp meow. Still, the frozen princess's face remained unresponsive. "Esmeralda, please, please taste the soup." Thane's voice cracked and a tear leaked from one eye. He didn't try to deny his connection to this woman, despite the nightmares and other negatives. A soft tinkle from the holly berries outside spoke to her. "Esme, wake up." Thane glanced up at Shade. "Open the door so she can hear them better." "But the cold outside." "Do it," Thane barked. A gust of winter swept in along with the loud jingle from the berries. "Esme, you must eat the soup." That's the end of the reading.
Okay. What is a wayward? What do you mean, her wayward?
Well, I can't completely reveal that, but a wayward is, Esme has a hidden power. She is a witch, but she also has a power she isn't aware of that she inherited from her father. And he was a wayward, and he had the same combination of being a witch along with this other power. And so she discovers this. It's something that was hidden from her. Her mother hid it from her. And so during the book, both Esme and the reader and Thane get to discover what that hidden power is that she holds.
Oh, we're running well short of time, but we do have another question from an R.C. Sure. Daniel, who says, "How many books will you have in this series?"
Oh, well, that's I will have probably 12, maybe more. So that's a long series. I'm really, really loving the series. It's set in an area where I grew up, and I love it. So a long time.
And your next book?
Next book is called Witch's Vintage Woods, and it'll be out in the spring.
Oh, right. So you're going to be back in the spring, right?
Absolutely. I will. I promise.
Wonderful. Well, this is thank you, Marcia A. Moore, for coming back on the show. And the books are called Witch's Cursed Cabin. And the third book is Blood, Ice, and Oak Moon. These are all from the Coon Hollow Coven tale. You can find out more about her books. And also, if you go to her website and sign up for her newsletter, you will get a free fantasy romance short story, but her website is Marsha A. Moore, MOORE.com. So go check it out. Go sign up for her newsletter. But go get her books and just revel in this mystical fantasy world with the witches and everything. The good witches. I mean, they mm-hmm. are. I kind of get a little bit of Harry Potter. I mean, you know, along the lines of, you know, these are people doing good rather than evil and trying to right the wrongs. And this is sort of like their, I won't say superpower, but it's along those lines. But it's from coming from the earth and the Mother Gaia and all that, mm-hmm. Given
yeah,
these abilities. You know, well, Marsha, thank you again for coming, and I look forward to seeing you next spring.
Okay.
And for those of you who thank you, Marsha and R.C. Daniel, for your questions. My name is Linda Mooney. This is Other Worlds of Romance on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you again. Take care. Good night. Have a great week, and happy fall. Bye-bye. And we're done.
Okay.
And
I
love
those. That was fun.
It was.
I'm glad we got questions.
But yeah, sometimes I get two or three questions. Sometimes I get like a whole lot more. But this time I got about four or five questions, but a lot of them were the same thing. So
okay,
you know, basically, so I just picked one, you know, to
sure.
to
sure.
And all, but I do this. I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about the witch's cursed cabin and the you know, we're going to dig up the body so I can get the hair and the skulls turn around, and I'm going, oh my God, creepy. Love it.
Yeah, I did a lot of research on that one with the not only the necromancy, how to raise the dead, but also the dream magic. And it was a lot of dark magic in that book. Mm-hmm. That book went that direction, which was interesting and fun. Mm-hmm.
I found a post off Tumblr, and it was showing these were people who are white witches and they practice it. And they were basically saying that depending on the color of the candle depended on what you were trying to enlighten with or what you were seeking. And
mm-hmm.
black
right.
candles weren't necessarily evil.
Correct.
So,
right.
And I thought that was very, very fascinating that the different colored candles were for, you know, some things for enlightenment, some for love, some were for, you know, to vanquish illness. And I found that fascinating. So, anyway, well, I'm going to go ahead and let you go, and because I know it's late where you are, but thank you again for coming on the show, Marsha.
Yeah, thank
and,
you.
I look forward to your next book. I really do. So you take
Great.
Care, all right?
Okay. Thank
all
you
right?
so much for hosting and having me. Bring me on.
Anytime. I love these books. You take care, all
right?
Okay. All right.
Thanks
we'll talk
again.
To you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.